Tune in to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM, and be part of an in-depth discussion on events you didn't know you needed to hear until you do, from Namibia, Africa, and around the world. Tune in from Monday to Friday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. only on Eagle FM.
Good Monday afternoon. It's a Monday, so I don't like Monday because Monday is a way of disrupting my weekend. It's like one of those things of, you know how your sleep is at its finest in terms of awesomeness at 3 o'clock in the morning? Yeah, weekends are somewhat like that when it comes to, at least, well, to me, you know, I will start enjoying it, but not as much on Fridays, and then Saturday, it's just going well, but it's at its highest in awesomeness on Sunday. So when Monday pops up, that's like, you know, someone waking me up at 3 o'clock in the morning. That's when the sleep is just getting to the level of all heavenly. But that's my point of view on Mondays. Maybe you like them like yours truly, Dwight. But speaking of which, welcome to Home Run, wherever you're tuned in from. This is Home Run with Helmut and Dwight here on Eagle FM, as usual, keeping you company from 4 o'clock until the hour of 6 with one exciting topic after another. Another one. And that's how we operate from Monday to Friday. And of course, on Sundays, we have our different segments. His much more earlier than mine because they just looked at us and were like, okay, you know what? Helm, sleepyhead. Your show starts at 11. And they nailed it. So, today's subject is about lifelong learning. And this is based on a report that's coming out of the International Labour Organization. So that means you've got to listen now. It's a time to listen. And that means, well, you know, when you look at the subject of lifelong learning, just in general, it takes at least those of us that have the memories of being told by our parents that, you know what, you know, as a kid, you don't want to go to school. So as you struggle to pull yourself out of bed, actually, as you are yanked out of bed, I would not have woken up. As you are yanked out of bed and you are literally forced to go to school. And yes, for our own good, because, well, I'm sitting in here in the studio, you know, breaking English, though I may be. But, well, I'm getting paid because they yanked me out of bed each and every single morning for me to go to school. Now, that school, almost like the standard school as we know it, is respected and it's more, sees a significant investment in all countries across the world in terms of resources in resource allocation and overall basically attention to its structure in a way that it must function for everyone to go to school, for people to acquire skills to keep the country's economy running. But one thing that is more often trailing behind in terms of education, it turns out the world of both the, you know, developed and developing country, and of course things like this, every time that the word investment is brought up, you don't have to be an economist to know that much of it is obviously lagging. It's most likely to be lagging in developing countries. So lifelong learning is one, is one of those like areas where investment and resource allocation is not a priority for a lot of countries. Now you have to understand that we're already scarce on resources. So that means, resource allocation is being prioritized to sectors that are somewhat having a good return on investment to keep the economy running. And lifelong learning then tends to trail behind, which is why I believe we keep having, you know, voters' education. Speaking of which, oh, hang on a second.
Why did you throw that in there?
Well, voters' education is part of lifelong learning. Look, one thing I find funny about life, about voters' education is you have to sit people down to tell them which box to put a cross. That's all they're doing, just put a cross on this. But
And ask yourself,
yeah,
with what you just said there, yeah, ask yourself,
in comparison to the comments that we've had of ministers and even of presidents of Namibia,
yeah.
ministers of education, presidents of Namibia, who have said Namibia has achieved high literacy rates across the country,
mm-hmm.
but we are still training people to stand right next to a box
yeah.
and tell them, if you've made a selection, put it here.
Yeah.
If you've made another selection, put it there. And please read so yeah. that you know what happens potentially if you go and make the wrong selection. You want to tip exit out.
Yeah.
You can't tip exit.
People did that?
There is no tip exit. No, you can almost use pens.
Yeah, because you literally are given a pencil. At yeah. least that's what I experienced.
Yeah. Or you can't cross everybody.
Yeah, and you also have to cross inside the box next to your candidate, not in your candidate's face. Wait. He's not dead. And you are being, which is why you are voting for him.
You know, Helmut.
Yeah.
I don't know where you started with that, but it's actually a good point you started on that. If we had to look at even like in the broader scheme of things of Namibia's development agenda,
mm-hmm.
my voter education. Last year presented a hypothesis.
Mm-hmm.
Which election is the most important election that we should actually take into consideration and we should be serious about? Is it the presidential elections or is it the local and regional authority elections? Which one impacts the Namibian on the street, the Namibian at home, the Namibian in their house, the Namibian at school who's a young person? The Namibian at university and the Namibian listening now to us, well, they are obviously, some of them might have knocked off, some of them might have been bunking their work.
Yeah.
We're not going to mention names. Some of us, we just know who you might be. But that Namibian has to also now ask the same particular vital question in terms of importance.
Yeah.
Who is more important in the broader scheme of things of development for you, the Namibian, of seeing the Namibia of the future, you know, the Namibian where everyone has achieved low-cost housing and affordable housing, where the Namibian of the future is, you know, occupying not just leadership positions, but also highly technical and highly skilled positions across the economy, where a vast majority of Namibians are employed. Which election is actually the election that provides the impact for that Namibian who wants to see those goals?
Okay, there are two or three answers I can provide for that.
Yeah, I can yeah. also give you the answer, but it's an answer that came from the Namibia Institute of Democracy interview, remember, that I had mm-hmm. last year.
Yeah.
It's literally that you realize later on
yeah.
that the local and regional election, local authority and regional authority election
yeah.
is supposed to be the one that we should be voting for first. Before we vote for political parties' leadership into the presidential office?
You know, I think for a very long time, how do I put this, local public representatives are not given the, you know, the attention they deserve because they are the ones in close proximity
yeah.
to the, you know, to the Namibian on the ground. To the ordinary Namibian in the ground. That means, depending on the region or constituency you live in, you are most likely to see or meet with your local authority representative than you are.
You are supposed to.
Yeah.
Let's also put.
So you're supposed to.
A question mark. You are supposed to. Remember what yeah. was my accusation last year?
Yeah.
I did not see any of the only three candidates that were only there for the Windhoek East constituency.
Then you're supposed to vote.
I did not see them. They did not canvass for votes. They didn't go from door to door. They didn't have town hall meetings. And when I can mention to you all the schools in the Windhoek East constituency there,
mm-hmm.
that they could have had town hall meetings in, invited community members from the suburbs and from those neighborhoods
mm-hmm.
to come and meet them, to share concerns, to position their talking points, to ask the community, the electorate.
Yeah.
And I didn't see any of that kind.
No, when it comes to which one of them carries much more weight in terms of, I'm looking at it from a close proximity standpoint.
Yeah.
And that's because it's much easier to pass your concerns to your local authority than, to your local officials than the president.
Or, yeah,
members of parliament. Because
the president will just tell you straight up, like some of us have said, that's I've got people there for a reason.
Yeah, that's their role.
Yeah, that's their job.
That's their job.
I can't intervene on their job.
Yeah.
Which is a fair answer.
Apart from the fact that I have my own job.
Which is a fair answer.
Yeah.
But in hindsight, when you look at that response, Hamud,
yeah,
and the hypothesis that I positioned right there after interviewing the Namibia Institute of Democracy's people last year,
yeah,
when they it was at the start of this year
when you had a conversation with Jacinta?
It was Jacinta, yeah, and Valeria, yeah. Is her name Valentina? Okay, Valentina. When I had that conversation with them,
yeah,
and I positioned to them based on their own report, based on their observer findings of the local and regional authority elections, because the mistake we as the media also make is we go for the fanfare, we go for the populist, the popularity contest of a presidential election.
Yeah.
And then when you go look at that discussion right there, the ECN learned from its mistakes of the presidential election of too few voter booths,
yeah,
polling booth shopping, like the African Observer said. The ECN should not have encouraged polling booth or voting booth shopping.
Yeah.
And you then look at, okay, so things looked like they were all good. And then last year's elections, you had this low turnout. You had this low response. You had this lack of interest response coming through in the Namibian context for local and regional authority elections. And then you had to ask yourself the question in terms of, okay, what is the difference between these two elections besides the obvious information contained in the labels? First and second was that everyone was switched on for the voter education that took place then.
Mm-hmm.
Vote, there's an opportunity to vote for the leader that you want, for the national leader that you want. But people did not know, primarily in that report from the Namibia Institute of Democracy's findings,
yeah,
people didn't care about, not even the young people, didn't care about who the local councillors were. But the local councillors, Helmut, guess what? Are the guys that have to deliver the development. From our previous analysis here on the Home Run, the analysis from a standing committee, whereby a local councillor was asked, so what do you think about the local project, the capital project in your region? And the guy went like, in my region? In your
what
town?
Project?
In my town? And then they deduced, we are too centralized. These guys don't know what's actually happening in their towns. They don't know what's happening in their regions. So in the broader scheme of things, it's a good thing you started on the voter education thing, Hamid, but the voter education is a realm out there. Because our discussion speaks about a realm that touches every economic activity.
Yeah.
Including education. Which actually it is based on education.
Yeah, it is. Look, the reason why I started from that point is, there's an angle. There's an angle that I should have missed.
Yeah.
I mean, that I could have missed, but you pointed it out, which is, comparing.
You use me for the bad cop scenario.
Absolutely. More complimentary than antagonistic. But, the thing is, if you look at it, the presidential national assembly elections are considered like the
be all and end all.
The elections, the bosses of the elections. Except when you look at it in terms of interaction, in terms of the people that are in close proximity to you to listen to your grievances, and basically whose whole responsibility is listen to a better service provision in the in their respective constituencies
being
and regions.
In touch with the whole country.
Exactly.
Yeah. Being plugged in, basically.
Which is now and one thing I like about the system, the structure is that is our bicameral structure of of a parliament. You have the national council, which is now made up by your day to day local councillors that are basically forming up this overall national representative body known as the national council. Now when you look at it like that, I totally understand why a lot of us see the National Assembly and the presidential elections as the elections of all the elections that determines pretty much everything.
Mm.
And that's because that was my point of view for a very long time until, you know, until I started realizing that, okay, no, until I came to realize that you have the National Council for a reason. But now, when you look at it from, and I think that that understanding is not just on ordinary citizens, it's just the world over. I mean, it's in most citizens in Namibia. And I'm saying that because this earlier this year, the Minister of Urban and Rural Development met with, with the newly elected councillors in Rundu. Mm. What's the first, one of the things that he pointed out was basically, more like advising them or informing them, I'm not sure which one is which, that, you know what, you can go through us to have access to financing for your region or constituency.
Yeah.
You can do that.
Yeah.
Now, when he pointed that out, I'm like, okay, do they not know that, or they don't know the channels, or what is going on? Because every time that there's a lack of development in any constituency, the response that you most likely get is...
it's the minister's fault.
Yeah, it's either the minister's fault or you voted the wrong president. Now, at this point, you're wondering
the president has to find out...
like, what the heck?
How do I intervene without actually breaking the law and also even employment elements? Because people forget, a president is technically also signs an employment contract. People forget that. People forget that all our presidents, they technically signed a labor contract with the state.
They also signed one with God by putting one hand on the Bible and saying, so help me God.
Yeah, but look, that's the swearing-in process.
Mm-hmm.
The swearing-in is the show, you know. You need to publicly indicate that this person to the country had been sworn in. The swearing-in is, Helmut, you and
very
I know.
Very ceremonial.
Yeah, you and I know what a ceremony is.
Look, yeah, I know. They
a
say...
ceremony is technically because the president signed a contract somewhere to get that pay, all the benefits for the immediate family to live in state house and to also be part of the benefits bucket. Or basket, if we can use either of those particular illustrations. And they had to sign something. Not a proxy signing on behalf of... The president had to go there with a pen and her right hand, or if she's left-handed, whatever, whichever hand, or if she's ambidextrous, she can write with both hands. And she had to sign her name. Her husband had to sign his name. You sign... There's an employment contract there. And that is... The fallacy that Namibians today think of our politicians, because for some reason, some people think literally that the highest office in Namibia is not an employment office. I'll say that again. Even for ministerial positions, those guys signed a contract. You saw the ceremony. The ceremony is a facade. You didn't see a signing ceremony, meaning them standing with a pen and a paper, and they were told by that the chief justice or the judge president.
You saw
dated and even initial every page. Put it down.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Now look. After James Nkwasa, the Urban and Rural Development Minister, was in Rundu telling all the local, local public representatives that, you know what, you can, you know, as long as you just go through the Office of the Urban and Rural Development, Ministry, and we also have to do that by coordinating with the Minister of Finance, you as a local authority official can access funding for your local development needs. Now, I feel like for a very long time, a lot of us only thought that the only way that development projects are funded is through the money that is allocated by the Minister of Finance every beginning of financial year.
Mm.
Now, two things came to my mind when James Nkwasa pointed that out. I was like, okay, now a lot of career politicians are about to go full Mozambique on us. If they didn't know this, then now if they knew this, why haven't they been practicing it? And if they did not know it, that's even more scary. Now, my whole election idea as part of the overall today's home run, lifelong learning, is coming out of, because I think I spent a half, you know, half an hour, you know, trying to just look at, you know, understand what's going on in Ethiopia, because they headed for the polls today. For their for their general elections,
and you should see the articles.
Do those guys even have opposition?
No, it's not just those guys. The journalists who are sitting in European countries and American countries.
Oh yeah, those are the guys that are being interviewed.
Ethiopia is this close to another particular civil. I'm like, it's a guys. You know that the AU head office is in that country. Why would you say something like that? Why would you go for the shallow, surface level analysis in terms of what does politics mean for Ethiopians?
Yeah.
Helmut, do you know that I've got a friend, her sister actually worked and stayed in Ethiopia, she's a Namibian lady. She explained actually to me what happened before COVID happened, before 2020. Things were boiling under the surface in Ethiopia. To an extent, we did not know. I was this close to using another crude particular word, but we did not know. We didn't have a cooking clue
that a storm was brewing.
That it was there. And the storm, Helmut, was literally on the level and on the scale of Rwanda.
Oh boy!
It was racial. It was tribal. It was ethnic based. Accusations were coming out. The Ethiopian. If I ask you, what does an Ethiopian look like? You will have an idea of, you know, someone light-skinned.
Yeah.
Have you seen what a person from Tigray looks like? The province of Tigray. The one that was in the conflict recently.
Yeah.
They're slightly darker.
Yeah,
they look like Somalians.
Eritrea side.
Yeah, they look like Eritreans or Somalians. They're slightly darker. That was on the level that this fellow Namibian explained to me. That was on the level of where Ethiopia's actual stability was. Now, mind you, if you go and read up the Wikipedia entry that exists about the province of Tigray and how did Abiy Ahmed come into power, the current prime minister, Abiy Ahmed had to make a deal with the Tigrayan party, which had been in charge of Ethiopia before Abiy Ahmed became prime minister.
Yeah.
So they had enjoyed the political party based upon racial lines. From this one province of Tigray, which is to the north of Ethiopia, which borders onto Eritrea.
Yeah.
Eritrea and Sudan on the one side. And I think, no, it doesn't border onto Somalia on the other
South
side.
South Sudan.
Yeah. It borders onto South Sudan on the one side. Is that this particular party had been in charge of much of Ethiopia's particular national destiny and national sort of like development agenda before Abiy Ahmed. But no one was talking about this. No one was highlighting the context. No media outlet out there was talking about who is this Tigray? What's the Tigrayan party's name? The TLP, I think, the Tigrayan something party. No one was talking about why are these guys fighting against the government forces. It was because they refused to follow Addis Ababa's policies on economic and national development. Now, why does that sound very familiar to, like, for example, the cessationist movement that happened there in Zambezi region?
Mm-hmm.
Why does it sound very familiar? Why does it sound familiar to someone not wanting to be part of a national project, but them having a very narrow ethnic-based project about, which is basically treasonous in its foundations because it's against the constitution of the country?
Yeah.
And it basically speaks of an agenda that is exclusionary, nationalistic in another sense. That's why you can't also just use the word nationalist willy-nilly in the modern day context of speaking about national identity, national development, service provision even. Because we have the Austrian painter who gave you an example, a failed example of nationalism. And it didn't turn out so well. So if we look at this aspect of what happened there, I'm sorry to say, when we look at information, we are, in some cases, we're given like 3% of the actual picture. So, I'm sorry to say, but many parts of this continent, we have a lot of unresolved foundational societal issues. I'll say it again. We have a lot of unresolved issues. And Namibia is also one of those countries.
Yeah, actually, I would say every country has touchy subjects.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I've watched enough documentaries to tell you that, believe me, every country has a subject or two that are only whispered in very low whispering voices, and
they slide past the subject
exactly,
or the main question of why is this happening.
Every country has that. It's just that if it's not if you have opportunistic politicians that are willing to use anything to score what Mlemba like to describe as cheap political points, and they start picking up some of the most like incendiary subjects and building political somewhat points out of them, and things that are sensitive tend to pull a lot of people.
Now
Ethiopia's relationship with its neighbors. I mean, Ethiopia almost had a gunfight with the Somali government over the, let's call it an attempted recognition of Somaliland, so they can have access to, port access.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's one. Their relationship with their neighbor, Eritrea, is also a very sour one.
Yeah.
Yeah, and just like you have different tribes and different basically different tribes in Namibia, then they don't have everything figured out. They do have tensions here and there, but the thing is, the most important thing when it comes to this, especially tribal and racial differences, is not to allow it to brew to the point where it reaches Nazi Germany or 1994 Rwanda. Because if it's not, if it's not kept in a certain
category. Former Yugoslavia was also such
exactly, former Yugoslavia.
That is an even worse example.
That was worse.
That was a whole country, guys, of like worse. Large ethnic, let me not use the word ethnic, but a large collection of various ethnicities.
Yeah.
And do you know what, Helmut? I'm trying to undiscover from that Yugoslavia discussion there. Because it literally happened in the 90s alongside many of the other particular conflict zones.
Yeah.
Like the World War that was here on the African continent where we in Namibia participated in.
DRC.
Which is in DRC. The Rwanda genocide that happened. And then was obviously Yugoslavia. There was also another one that was also... you mentioned, the guys here in the 90s. These guys from the Angolan side that kept raiding Namibian communities on this side of the border.
Yeah.
So we had a lot of these particular conflict hotspots and scenarios that Namibia can learn directly from, but also the rest of the world can learn directly from. But when you look at the discussion specifically of like Yugoslavia, Hamid, when you go look at the mess of the Balkans today, these guys were just better off being Yugoslavia. They would have been Europe's, they would still be Europe's, Eastern Europe's largest, or Europe overall, Europe's, they would still be Europe's largest country by surface area.
Yeah.
But now you've got the Croats in Croatia. Yeah. You've got the Serbs in Serbia. You've got the, what's the other guy's name? The Slovenians in Slovenia. You've got the, and much of this was based upon Orthodox Christian, Islam, and there's another Christian denomination there that played a major role. And in every scenario, I'm trying to find out who broke up, who was actually the tinderbox, the match that ignited the racial politics that played out in the Balkans.
Yeah, yeah, that also had a significant religious aspect to it.
Yeah, yeah. But remember, Hamoud, those guys knew each other because Yugoslavia...
Yeah, just like Rwanda, they were neighbors.
Not just that. The whole Yugoslavia was a former Ottoman territory.
Yeah.
And the Ottomans literally merged Christians and Muslims together.
Yeah, the Ottomans were very good at that. Like,
and they were very cosmopolitan even as a colonial power.
Yeah.
Because what many people don't remember is that the Ottomans were in the colonial basket of colonial powers at the end of the First World War, because they were one of the countries that were told, give up your colonial territories.
Yeah.
Guess who told them?
British.
Yeah.
And then that's how the story of Palestine starts.
Yeah, the Israel-Palestine situation.
Yeah. And everyone is surprised. Are you kidding me? All you just have to do is...
And guess what? Erdogan is in the crosshairs also of Netanyahu. I don't know what's wrong with Netanyahu.
Oh, that makes a lot of sense.
I really don't know what's wrong with Netanyahu.
It's not really, that's not a Netanyahu problem. It's I'm siding with analysts and historians that are of the point of view that this is more of a Zionist project. It's not a one man show.
Mm.
Yeah, and it's one that can take you back to the 1940s because you keep saying you don't want war, but you keep invading neighbors. And just in the middle of the Iran invasion, we started hearing, Turkey is the new Iran. I'm like, where is this coming from? Turkey is the new Iran. And you're looking at that and going like, there's more idealistic, more like religious ideology at play here. This is not just politics. And much of the mainstream media is owned by the very guys that have, majority shares in weapons manufacturing companies that are, benefiting from the war. So the whole thing becomes, it's not a democracy thing. Or it's not a we want peace thing, or we want the right to exist thing. It's more of we have this project that was that we picked from a book that was written 3,000 years ago, and we hold everything to be true, and therefore we are just going to we are going to implement it. And I'm just looking at that and going like, okay, first of all, Turkey is a member of NATO. That is a little bit of snag, and the US is a member of NATO. Now, taking the US out of the equation, because the US will side with Israel under, from the look of things, until death do them apart. But one thing that you see here is that they will have to do some kind of technical calculations or maneuverability for, in order to go to war with Turkey. Otherwise, then they will have to set aside, they will have to set aside the whole NATO ideology before going to war.
Yep.
Yeah. Otherwise, then you are looking at a war between the entire NATO and Israel. And first of all, that's not going to happen because the entire NATO actually is more subservient to Israel than they will be, even if war breaks out. With Turkey. But here's the thing. Iran is strong, but Turkey is even stronger. So that is going to cause a whole lot more chaos, but that's a whole subject on its own.
Mm.
Now, coming back from that and just past the whole Ethiopia. Now, the thing is, there are regions in Ethiopia now that had to be left out of the elections, unfortunately, because the regions are considered quote unquote unstable. Yeah. And, looking at that, just coming from Ethiopia and then just past Angola, 2022-2023, when the SADC heads of state and heads of state representatives met in Luanda, where they signed a Luanda declaration. The main discussion they had was, this was a UN-sponsored or UN-organized event. So the SADC leaders just had to meet in Luanda. And one of at the top of the agenda was how can they combat corruption in the region?
Mm.
And they came up with five objectives of how to sort of like hinder, how to make corruption difficult for those that are, having a, you know, long glueish fingers in public offices.
Yeah.
Now, one of the objectives they came up with was civic education. Provide as much civic education as possible to the public so that they are aware of what's going on in their economic sphere, not just what's going on in the political sphere. And I found that to be very interesting, because that is something that you will have to provide at all levels, irrespective of age and race and gender, or whether you went to school or not.
Mm.
So that, for me, is going to form part of the lifelong learning. And I think that's even, you know, that's even more important, because we will always need public representatives. And life skills is one of those subjects that makes me think we need a lifelong learning. And, finding that, crossroad, addressing the elephant in the road at this point, that's at the crossroad between, modern society and, Western societal norms that we have adopted, and how they are somewhat, to some degree, in sync and to some degree in conflict with our cultures and norms. Now, we're not having these conversations. We're not having a lot of those. And because, you can't blame us. It's, for the most part, in respect of our respective cultures. But, for that, there's a large trade-off to that. Take, for example, earlier this year or sometimes late last year, when we were talking about, HPV virus. It's also a form of STD.
Yeah.
Yeah. The thing is, it's an STD. Now, topics surrounding sex are a taboo. Now, but the thing is, the health impact topics like sex have on young people, or basically the entire society, are real. The negative impacts are real, but the topics that will help address those negative impacts are taboo. So now at this point you have some health problems that are not being addressed, not because we know that they are not, we don't know they're happening. We know they're happening, we just don't want to address them.
Yeah.
And to address them, you have to jump through cultural hoops. Now, and which again, is respectable. But now that's just the tip of the iceberg of why we need lifelong learning. But just from the International Labour Organization standpoint, they are looking at lifelong learning in terms of not how to bring different people of different walks of life and cultures together in one community. But from an employability standpoint, since they are in International Labour Organization, so that's why I like their definition of lifelong learning. So they are looking at one's ability to be flexible in their lifespan.
Yeah,
yeah. When you are working all throughout your lifespan, industries are going to change. Skill requirements for different jobs are going to change. So the goal of lifelong learning then is to make sure that you are adaptable for whatever change that comes in your line of work. Which now brings up the question of how are we doing, as a country or as a continent? Because one thing that is pointed out by the report is that in terms of investment, not a lot of resources is allocated to lifelong learning.
No. Nope.
That's because you have a lot of resource scarcity. It's not rocket science, but that is now impacting the flexibility in the quickly shape-shifting, basically, job market, especially with the advance of technology, digital technology and AI.
And that's also part of the scary stuff, Helmut. I'll be honest with you specifically. Okay. Before we started the show, just so that our listeners know about the inside joke you and I had, specifically where I asked you, have you seen lifelong learning, specifically while we've been co-hosting and hosting it at Eagle FM? And you said, dude, listen, our job technically is lifelong learning, which is a very good point.
Yeah.
A second scenario has also been, Helmut, that specifically when you look across the economy in the country, Namibians have to ask themselves specifically pertaining to what we are dissecting is whether or not they also see continuous and regular skilling up. Now, the ILO's particular take on the lifelong learning aspect has been the currently what they've assessed has been that people in low paying jobs specifically are not the ones who are being exposed also be to lifelong learning or continuous skills refresher courses. You can call it a refresher course, whatever you want to call it, but you know, updating them continuously, allowing these particular participants in the economy to access new skills, new training, or to retrain in certain scenarios. And this is obviously a particular thing that you can see that what they are looking at is saying, hey, listen, since the technologies are now becoming wild and out of control, and you know, the tech guys are literally leading the next industrial trends, you've got to have these particular skills in your skill set. I can tell you confidently today, Helmut, if I did not make this change specifically into the broadcasting media realm back in 2020, I probably would have struggled trying to find a job in the previous career, which was basically a sales function post 2021. After 2021, I would have struggled.
Because of the COVID-19 impact on the overall economy?
Not just that. Yeah. Also, primarily, if you position to the skill sets with the marketing diploma that I had at the time, and if I didn't enroll already into the journalistic degree already, it would have been struggle to readjust, to reposition myself, to navigate a new skill set, a new industry, and have a new kind of a perspective on how I participate in this Namibian economy going ahead. Because since I've changed the skill set, Helmut, you would not believe me. Every day I sit back and I take stock of my professional life, my career, and I think back, Dwight, would you have known the things that you know today if you did not change course back in 2015? If you did not take that purposeful decision to say, Dwight, go and learn new skills. Go and learn new skills. You can't stop here.
You made a purposeful decision?
I did. Even though it was a year that I don't want to remember, specifically because of other personal particular things that happened or personal tragedies, it's a year that still, as a bookmark, you have these years in your life, Helmut.
Yeah.
I know you've also probably thought back on these particular events in your own personal history.
Yeah. That were so life-changing at the time.
They were
brutal when you're going through them. But now, you know, in retrospect, you're looking at them and going like, you know what? To some degree, it's safe to say I'm here because of what happened there.
Yeah. Or it helped me steer down this particular.
Yeah.
Now, I took a sort of like a designated, a purposeful decision. I made this decision. Hey, listen, Dwight, you can't stop here. And since you're already in media, expand your skill set further into the sector. The sector is going to grow. Back then in 2015, one of the lecturers that I had was literally said that it's one of the most robust sectors, and it still is more robust, the media sector. For Namibia, there's still a lot of potential, but the potential is in the ideas realm of things. The potential is not in the commercialization of things, meaning how to convert the ideas, Helmut, into bankable, commercial, they make money every month, ideas. That's the only problems that I see every day. I'll say it again. It's the only problems. But I keep asking myself, the ideas, the potential for new business ideas that you sit in your head with, Dwight, and you're trying to troubleshoot how to connect that idea, Helmut, with a commercial aspect so that you can know if you approach an investor, the investor can see where the money is being made. But if you don't have that, I'm telling you, you'll just be sitting with that pie in the sky. But I would still, just to get back to it, lifelong learning, in hindsight, is a super good thing. And specifically for an economy like Namibia, specific for like Namibians. And even though Franz told us now, just before you stepped into the studio, you know, before we stepped in also, Franz told us, for us guys that don't have kids yet, what are we doing with our lives? Come on. Look, Vision 2030 is fun, eh? I think that thing can wait. But on my side, it can wait. It can literally wait that side.
Look, man. You're not the only one having that point of view in terms of in terms of a family. And this is something that I think it's a lot of developing countries are going to regret. But the thing is, a lot of developing countries like Namibia has a lot of potential templates they can learn from over what happens when you are not taking care of the family on the ground.
Yeah.
Singapore, South Korea, and Japan, and even China, they have had
Even the U.S. People are not talking about the U.S. Even the U.S. and Canada, all the European countries, the U.S. and Canada, Helmut, they face a particular problem because the global South has the healthy birth rates. Now they call the birth rate a replacement rate.
Yeah.
How many times, if you and I get into our 60s, meaning our pensionable ages, how many Namibians are there behind us that can do what you and I are doing today?
Yeah.
That is the bigger problem.
I brought up the Asian countries because they have put up a lot of incentives
to
try and resuscitate the whole,
birth rate
thing. Yeah. But people, you have spent decades telling people not to have kids. You are not just going to, you are not just going to flip a switch and all of a sudden make them want to. It will take forever.
Or you've got like a national culture like the South Koreans, which I found out last year what that national culture was, Helmut. There was a national culture up until 2004, but here in the 2010s also, in 2014, 2015-ish, where women were literally told, you are not a fully fledged citizen of this country. You are just there to have babies, look after the house, cook and clean.
Until when?
Yeah, in the 2010s, before COVID. Now suddenly women are being told, you have options in the economy. And the moment South Korean women realized, you know what, this national culture is a problem. And because we have to look at this in the modernity, in the aspect of the modern society you want as a country, as a government, people realize, you know what? Marrying and having kids, let's go to university. Let's fill our heads with knowledge. Let's explore the world as well. Now, South Korean women want to also go and travel.
Yeah.
So there's nothing wrong with that, Helmut.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with women having jobs. The concern is...
Yeah, because they are women, not photocopy machines.
So. Yeah, but still, the concern is, whose perspective do you hear from a national birth rate? Because I'll tell you now, women don't care about that lingo. Do you know why they started that thing also?
What?
That story around South Korea.
What?
Do you know about the NGO that was started by a woman in South Korea because she came out of a very bad relationship, a gender-based violence induced relationship where she literally said she doesn't want to marry, she doesn't want to have kids, she wants to live her life as an individual, she wants to be an individual,
and she started
started this NGO for other women, and now they live together in the same house, these women, like-minded women, and they realize that they find fault in their national societal structure. Now, when you come to an African context as well, you come to Namibia as well, Windhoek is technically the only metropolitan area of Namibia. You can't count the coast even. The coast is just like a far-flung industrial park with tourism on the one side and hospitality on the other side, and then it's just, harbor, basically. But when you look at... I almost said advanced economy, but they are an advanced economy. I mean, they built ships.
They are even now telling us Namibia to be part of the green shipping arrangement.
North Korea.
Yeah, South Korea.
So
when you go and look at South Korea, South Korea is what, 15 million to 20 million people in that country. When you go look at that, Helmut, and you look at the target of 2100, when the planners, the birth rate planners and analysts will say that's when humans will literally become, we will stop having babies by then. When you look at that, there are certain countries.
All of us?
Apparently. There are certain countries on this continent, not on this continent, on this world, on this planet, that are resilient.
Yeah.
There are certain countries. And believe you me, besides us Africans, the Europeans will also be there. Much of the smaller, you can call them the Native American, the Native Australian, the Native Polynesians from the Oceania region. Humans will still be there.
They'll be there. The Amazon jungle is still full of native tribes.
Yeah. Undiscovered.
Uh-huh.
And they wish to stay undiscovered.
Yeah. And you have the Sentinelis Island in the Andaman Sea, the side of India. So. Yeah.
With prehistoric humans.
Yeah, they don't want any contact. Yeah. So the Indian government was just like, you know what, just leave them alone.
Yeah. Now, believe you me, if the guys that are running ISIS and Al-Qaeda and the Taliban, if those guys also decide, let's modernize our societies in those in that region there, between Syria this side and Pakistan, let me include Pakistan. Believe you me, Hamoud, the women in their societies will also become aware. They'll also go to school. They'll also, the various current sort of like religious perspectives will realize the society needs to advance. You need to allow lifelong learning, university, freedom of expressions and all those kinds of things instead of just forcing it down with an American soldier with an American gun, with an American tank and an American hardware, with American ammunition under the flag of so-called democracy. Instead of doing that, you can allow that society in Afghanistan. And you will see they themselves, those planners, the guys in charge of government there in Afghanistan will realize, you know what? But in order for us to avoid pandemics, to improve on sanitation, to build schools, to improve our nutrition, to improve our food manufacturing and so on and so forth, to also have engineers and doctors. You need doctors for women and you need doctors for children. You need doctors for old people as well. We need to expand these services. Why? Because the society needs to be resilient and it needs to outlive the current society that's there. So you need to advance things. Now, when we look at these particular trends that are happening now in the English-speaking, Western-induced world, which Namibia is part of, you realize, Helmut, that at the forefront, unfortunately, the AFCFTA doesn't deliver on certain particular promises or certain particular plans or certain particular ambitions. Why do I say this? Because in the AFCFTA scope of things, they want to encourage you and MSME to take on the burden of exporting to a country where you don't even know if the money will be of value when that money comes here and shows here in your Namibian bank account. They don't know. They really don't know. Because they tried to convince you on one thing, but specifically on the foundational side of things, how trade usually happens is, do you allow the Zambian on the other side of the border to walk across the Namibian border without a passport? I'm not talking about the people who are family of each other on both sides of the river between Katima and what is on the other side of the Zambezi River.
Yeah, Zambia and the other side.
Yeah. I'm not also talking about, for example, the thing that you do, Helmut, sometimes when you tell us here on air about, just jumping in the canoe and just, scooting across the river. I'm also not talking about that kind of relationship set up because that's exceptional. I'm talking about if it's Dwight from Windhoek who wants to now drive to Luanda in Angola, will I be allowed without a passport to cross? No. I will not be allowed
Have a couple of Hendrik Witbois, you do.
They won't accept the Hendrik Witbois. They will ask for Benjamin Franklin's. You know it.
Oh, yeah. That.
It's Angola we're talking about. They've been exposed to Benjamin Franklin's. So the downside is, when we look at this particular discussion, the modernization of society is a good thing internally and also on a broader scale, which economists would come and tell you is a macro level. Sure, yeah. But on a micro level situation, there are certain things that need to be sorted out. Now, when we look at lifelong learning, Helmut, in the scale,
yeah,
I'll have to say this. Unfortunately, in that continental thing, I don't see it. Because it's each country up to themselves, sort yourselves out. See how you go from there.
That's not the only interesting, somewhat contradiction going on here, because one of the major discussions in terms of employment being had globally is how technology, especially digital technology, specifically AI, is going to impact, is already impacting and is going to further impact or change the landscape of everything employment.
Mm.
Yeah, now, that means having a discussion of lifelong learning, lifelong learning in terms of having flexibilities in one's career of being able to, to change with times as the employment market changes.
Yeah.
You have the skills that will basically give you some degree of flexibility so that you are not left out when the job market takes a different turn. That requires skills or and know-how that you are not familiar with. So let's look at the definition I was able to find from the report is lifelong learning, and I just decided to summarize it. Lifelong learning is the continuous learning from the continuous learning process that extends across education system, workplaces, and everyday life.
Yeah. Everyday life is what I'm interested in.
Yeah, lifelong learning extends. This part is from UNESCO. Lifelong learning extends across one's lifespan and helps provide people of all ages and origins with learning opportunities and activities as they respond to their specific needs in different life and professional stages. So, I remember 2005 all the way to 2010s, where, I kept hearing a lot of people talking about, upgrading so that they can meet the requirement of being a teacher. And the modern requirement of being a teacher, because a lot of them just shortly post independence qualifications, which were not requiring much in terms of academic inclination.
Mm.
And fast forward it, to the 2005 all the way to the 2010s, the education job market was now requiring a more advanced qualification for you to participate in that market. And a lot of them did not have those qualifications.
Yeah.
So what they did was, they were given, the few that I know, they were given an opportunity to upgrade their already existing qualifications. So an avenue of lifelong learning, if you ask me, because instead of telling them, we have these new ones that have all these qualifications that you guys don't have, so you guys have a good life, goodbye. So now we're just going to take all these new ones with the modern required qualifications and then put them in your place. They provided them with an avenue. Like, this is what you will have to get for you to keep up with the demands of, with the employment demands of your sector. In terms of skills. So, syllabuses were changing. And, things were beginning to become more advanced. And I did not actually realize how different the Finnish education system is until I looked at the requirements for one to become a teacher.
Mm.
Yeah. You know, when you look at why Finnish teachers now in Finland, teachers are some how to put this? Finland is one of those countries with the highest teaching paying job because of the requirements that you need to become one. Last time I checked, you need a master's.
And how do you achieve that, Helmut, when you look at it?
A lot of school.
No, not just your exposure as the individual.
Yeah.
The society, the country.
Yeah.
Because last time I checked now, Finland has a bunch of universities that are distributed across Finland. All those cities, all those towns provide the necessary economic value to each province or whatever region of the all of the national Finnish makeup. To know, Helmut, that one of the world's largest communication companies, Nokia,
yeah,
is named after the city, Nokia.
And you're like, really?
Did you know that, Namibians? The city.
You have junkies, you know, you have information junkies like me going, you know, I can, you know, I know how many people that live in that city. But, yeah.
But when you, but when we get smacked on the forehead with such information, with such knowledge, yeah. Are we asking the question in terms of looking back at what you see in certain countries and my exposure, even like recently when I got flown there to China, I go stand and look there and I'm like, now why does this small Chinese village look like a Disney movie? And you go stand there and you look at the situation and you go and think, but can't aspects of Namibia also look as inviting to everybody? For everyone, Helmut, literally for everyone. And when you come back to Namibia, yes, you are in love with your country. You miss it even sometimes just for half a day. You go like, you know, I miss the sunlight. I miss, you know, I miss my colleagues here back at Eagle FM. I want to see them again, even if it's just for ridiculous, you know, office banter and stuff like that.
You miss the sunlight?
Yeah, you actually miss the Namibian sunlight, Helmut. Do you know that there are foreigners in this country that don't want to go home just because of the sunlight?
One more time.
There are foreigners in this country who don't want to go home just because of the sunlight.
Now you remind me of I made one video basically talking about a bunch of things. One of them was just me pointing my excitement coming across, you know, on Russian TikTok about someone, you know, that is not Namibian, and talking about Namibian English, especially the Naman Herero genocide, and they're doing all these things in Russian. And I was just excited, so I left a comment in the comment section, saying, you know what, you know, it's well, as a Namibian, you know, it's just awesome to find someone talking about the history of my country. And now a bunch of people just left me a lot of compliments in the under my comment. I'm like, okay, for the love of God, now, I decided to sort of like as part of my learning process change my phone settings, you know, from English to Russian. So I took a screenshot when I was making one of my videos, and the weather. I mean, it's winter, so it's mostly sunny here. So, someone left me a comment saying, oh, there's a sun. I'm like, yes, there's a sun.
There's sun. It shines all year round.
So,
even when it wants to rain, the sun must first get its daytime quota in.
Yeah.
To make sure it's present.
Yeah. So, that's when I actually began to realize, there's something we don't appreciate. Sunlight. We don't have to worry about snow, right? So we have, all throughout winter, we have sunlight exposure. Yeah. So in other words, but in the northern hemisphere, most countries during winter, it's snowing. So they don't see the sun.
Yeah.
And come summer, it's raining again, clouds everywhere, no sun. And only maybe in one of a few of those days when they have this, when they have the clear sky, maybe. But for the large part of the year, they don't see the sun, which I think because of lack of exposure to countries like that, I can relate. when I have enough money to visit, maybe I'll just get a picture of what it looks like, but I can't relate. I'm just used to sunrise, sunset. So it become pretty standard that when was that? I was watching this Midnight Sun. It's a movie I think that was shot in Alaska. So one guy moved from the main part of the U.S. because Alaska is sort of like something that just marked that side of that side of Canada. Yeah. So when he got there, he had trouble sleeping because his watch was telling him it was 12 o'clock midnight, but he could still see the sun. And it was like, okay, what on earth is going on here? So
when the summer solstice kicks in, it's like, Helmut, do you know how bad it is now? Like in Berlin, the sun sets at 10 p.m. at night. It's still sunlight, like afternoon. It looks like here with us.
So when you're knocking
strong
over
strong sunlight, you, when you knock over at five, you're like, ah, da, da, da.
Look, that's why I'm saying, I have become conditioned to my, to the weather patterns and sunset and sunrise in Southern Africa that, as much as I read about those things and watch documentaries about midnight sun, I just can't relate. I mean, I would like to see the midnight, the northern lights in parts of, like Finland and Norway. But again, I cannot relate. I can't imagine looking at my watch. I think I would, I'll be tempted to think that maybe there's something, maybe my watch is broken or something. Because if I can see the sun in the afternoon and you're telling me, oh, it's 10 o'clock, how am I supposed to? How do you even go clubbing?
Do you know that they complain about 30 degrees Celsius there in Europe?
Heat? Really? 30 degrees?
Look. That's the reason why lifelong learning is the good subject here for today's the home run. Because if you understand what is hot in Europe versus what is hot for us. Hot for us if it's 35 and upwards.
Yeah.
Helmut, at 35, we are baking in our skins. For 35 degrees Celsius, in maybe in the Namib, yes, I know it'll be like that in the Namib. In the Namib, it'll be a cool day. Because where I was there in that park, that national park right outside Walvis Bay, at that small community, Utusep, back in 2023. Yeah, back in 2023. I've never felt such heat. And I forgot that heat. I forgot about that heat. I knew that heat in Rehoboth.
Yeah.
But the moment I felt that heat in 2023, there at the Khoisep River, on this is literally the as you come in, you first see the Minister of Agriculture extension office, literally at the start of the settlement.
Yeah.
Because the settlement it's like first you find that Ministry of Agriculture house, offices, then you find the school, and then a kilometer and a half you find the first house of the first sort of like community member
from the school.
From that person's house, then you find another 3-4 kilometers, you find the next person's like little what you call it, call it like a little. A little homestead situation.
Yeah.
And another 10 km, you find the next homestead. Another 10 km, the next homestead. But it's the same community. The community of Utusep. Now, as you follow the river becomes narrower. And the closer you get, the narrower the river becomes, the more intense the heat from the Namib Desert becomes. Now, at the mouth, when we were at the Ministry of Agriculture office, in the before lunch, the heat was not as intense. Then we had an appointment at the school, but the school, because we had to technically interview one of the teachers who was in charge of the school's garden, because they have a school garden there to grow their own fresh produce. So everything that they have in that garden, they eat in the school's kitchens for the hostel as well. Because they also have a hostel. It's a primary school. From there, Helmut, the first lady we stopped at, the auntie that has the cotton tree and the moringa tree, She has the cotton plants and the moringa tree, the two moringa trees. She's the one that went as far as going to school in Kietmans. And then she only reached, I think, grade 10 or something. And then she had to come back to Walvis Bay. And she worked in one of the fish factories in Walvis Bay. And then she decided, you know what, she's just going to resign and go back to literally living off of the land situation.
Yeah.
Back in her home community of Utusep. And she explained the heat. Because I asked her, how intense does the heat get here? How often do you guys get rain here? How often that?
Yeah.
When we got to the last settlement we could reach, the heat was so intense, Helmut, that the guy whose grandparents who he lives with explained, because his grandmother technically refused even to speak Afrikaans.
Why?
She was annoyed that we showed up. But it's like someone probably didn't share the information with her beforehand that there would be a party of these journalists on a climate change workshop being brought to her. So her grandson was sort of like now our source to talk to. And I asked outright because I could realize she could understand Afrikaans. She was refusing to speak Afrikaans, but I was testing them the whole time with the Afrikaans. And even though the hosts of the workshop didn't appreciate me speaking in Afrikaans, I had to throw it, you know, colloquially, keep it as friendly as possible, because mm-hmm. that's firstly what language is for, is that you've got to make a connection with the people. And I kept throwing like my questions and stuff in Afrikaans. And then, I was basically, you know, data mining from the grandson. And he kept explaining, he said, listen, it's difficult to work with crops with this much heat. Because from what we could see from the garden is that the crops wilt easier. Helmut, it's not heat from the sun. It's a wind that blows in from the Namib Desert.
Yeah.
It's a hot wind. The only other time I experienced the wind that devastating was back in 2005 when we went to go visit my sister when she still stayed in Johannesburg. On our way back after the 10 days being in South Africa. On our way back, we had to come through the same Upington route back to Namibia.
Yeah.
We stopped on the border at Upington because obviously that's what you have to do. The border officials have to now obviously do their necessary checks. We got off. Helmut, this is 6 o'clock. The sun is setting. It's literally just peaking its last peak of the world in the southern hemisphere on the horizon. The heat that is blowing across that Kalahari Desert.
There's a hot current coming from the desert.
It's like standing in an oven. I wanted to jump back into the air conditioning of the bus, but we had to go into the office to go for the processing, to put down your passport, to fill in the things. I just wanted to react, man. But it was literally someone standing with a microwave.
Yeah.
And they stand with a fan right next to the microwave and they go like, blow. Blow all that heat in that direction. It was ugly. It was ugly. Now, when you explain to people these kinds of things, this kind of knowledge, this kind of information, even in the lifelong learning discussion, because I know here in this lifelong learning report by the ILO, they highlighted the newer skills that employees and workers need to have are how do they function in the green transition?
Yeah.
In the sustainability component of life of things, in the tech skills of the future situations. Now, I'm sorry to say, guys, it seems like the tech skills seem to be like the only one that doesn't form part of the sustainability agenda. Specifically because of the data centers that you and I keep reading about.
Yeah.
How data centers are literally the most expensive thing on this planet today.
Yeah.
And they impact everyone's pockets. I still can't believe Google really.
Yeah.
With that thing in Chile. That thing that I showed you, that report.
Yeah.
The tech guys are just lying. I'll be honest with you. The tech guys are just lying. They tell us that things are sustainable. There are no more trees being cut down, but you go and use. What was that calculation you worked on? per day?
They're about, how many? There are millions of liters a day.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if swamps are drying up, you have to understand that South America is known to have a lot of swamps. If you look at Mexico City, where it's built right now, that was where the, you know, what's this, the Aztec empires basically, you know, set up the whole thing.
Yeah.
And when the Aztecs first set up their first, structures to establish the overall, Moctezuma level type of, type of civilization, it was a swamp. So, it's not surprising that there is a swamp that is now drying up somewhere in Chile because
a wetland. How is a wetland drying up because of a data center? Look, yes, guys.
There's a lot of information that's not being shared by by the operators themselves, the people that are that have a lot of business incentives in data centers. And look, I totally get it. I wouldn't be telling you the truth too if I have. If I have poured in millions of dollars of investment.
No, but here's...
Invested in millions of dollars. If I tell you the truth, they're going to close everything down and I don't have return on investment.
Yeah, but here's the unsustainable thing, Hamoud.
Unsustainable.
Which is also the unsustainable component, for example, that comes through from like this mining discussion in Namibia.
Yeah.
We have a problem with mining in the east of Namibia. But everywhere else we go, we have more than 200 unrehabilitated mining sites.
Yeah, those are okay.
Supposedly, yeah. Environmentally sustainable, supposedly. We don't know how to juggle between environmental management and agriculture, because agriculture is also damaging. And that's not what the ministry wants to hear. Of agriculture. Mm-hmm. That's not even what I think the authors of the NDB6, which includes the presidency and the National Planning Commission, they don't want to hear about such language because agriculture is damaging. It is damaging the environment.
Yeah.
They don't want to hear that. And then finally,
all you guys have to do is talk about fertilizer.
And yeah, we can go to that OAG report. And then finally, people don't want to hear about, I don't want to call it a dilemma, but sort of like the opposite scenario of mining plus tourism in the same region.
Oh, yeah, there's also a report on that, right?
Exactly. And then we've got like condensed activity of the same mining in the same region. Helmut, we'll probably end up with something like 7 uranium mines in the Irongo region. I'll say it again, with 7 uranium mines? Now, you gotta ask me. So, what's sustainable about mining? I really want to know. What is sustainable about mining? Because all the economic analysts will come and tell you about the supposed jobs, about the mineral being extracted. But none of them will tell you about the lasting impact that mining has on the natural environment. Wasn't that the accusation of Uys?
Yeah. Mining impact. We have 200 unrehabilitated. What impact are you talking about? I think, look, it's a very good argument to make because digging a giant pit in the middle of a piece of land is obviously damaging to the environment.
Yeah.
But the thing is, it's just too rich for you to point that out when you have 200 plus uncovered giant holes that you extracted resources from. It's very difficult to make that argument. The Uys quote unquote illegal lithium mining itself will just throw the whole debate out through the window.
Mm.
But here's the thing though. AI, for AI companies, a lot of companies, a lot of investors will want their return on investment back. So they are waiting for that.
Yeah.
So the people that this investor gave this money because of a very, awesome promise of return on investment they were provided with, they want to make sure that they make that money and so that they can fulfill their shareholder, the promise they made to their shareholders. So, if you just connect all those dots from you know how much money investors risked and the weight it must feel of the weight one must hold of making sure that they have a return on investment to fulfill those promises in an investment venture that is chewing through energy and water like a hot knife through butter. It's
not a hot knife. That is a laser saber. There's a Jedi laser saber, Hamuli.
Yeah, like
nothing chops water and electricity like that.
You see, that's exactly why they will never be honest with you. Look, it will be very difficult for them to tell you the truth, because if they told the truth, you know what that means?
Yeah.
Change in policy to regulate.
Yeah.
If change in policy to regulate comes in, they will just see the unsustainability in terms of water and energy consumption of the whole thing and shut it down. And what do you think investors are going
to
do?
But you have to start from construction. Because to construct a data center, you need to build walls for the thing.
And that thing is the size of a village.
No, what was the one of Chile?
Point of correction.
4,000 football fields. 4,000 hectares.
Yeah.
How is a data center the size of 4,000 hectares? Yes.
And it's generating heat and it's making a lot of noise, so the locals are not happy.
And it needs to be cooled every minute.
Now, that is just the AI department. Now, when you look at green investments, more like the green industry is one where there's a lot of interesting promises that are being made. Most of them are beginning to look like expensive promises. Now,
which they all are. We thought Namibian policymakers are bad.
No, they are not. Believe me. Compared to some guys, we're sitting with a couple of angels.
The world is ugly out there, guys. But yeah.
Now, look, I'm trying to compare, every time that we talk about opportunities within the green industry, I always compare it to the early days of the discovery of oil.
Yeah.
Like, now, imagine, all you just have to do is take all the discussions about the green industries that we're having today, replace green energy with oil, and you'll be in the early days of oil, in the early days of oil discoveries, where everything, you have to specialize in this field so you can have opportunities in this direction. But when we look into the oil industry right now, first of all, it's an extractive sector. Yeah. And how many people can can that sector employ? Short answer, not much.
Yeah.
Yeah, not much in comparison to industries like you'll have your textile industries, for example. Because of, the difference would be, for you to participate in an energy sector, first of all, it's a skills demanding thing. It requires one to specialize in their line of work.
Mm.
Because an accident is bad, really bad. An accident in the textile industry is you maybe just, stitching your shirt to the garment that you are stitching, maybe. But
or your finger might be punctured by the needle.
Yeah, by the needle.
Because your hand was in the wrong position.
Yeah. Now, on an oil rig, an accident means kaboom. Mm. So now you know why it's totally understandable for one to have a specialized level of skills for them to participate in that industry.
Yeah.
Now you have digital technology, which is seeing heaps and bounds in terms of advancement, and presenting a lot of present and also focused in future opportunities. And the same thing is happening in the energy sector, except these two now are not matching in terms of output.
Yeah.
First of all, AI is doing amazingly well. Give it time and it will do a lot of amazing things in terms of what it's able of doing. Except, the energy required to keep it up.
Mm.
We'll need a whole new version.
Yeah.
Now look, I think Elon Musk, opened up in one part, in some parts of the US, one of his data centers. They had to build extra methane generators on the side to run that thing. Is it methane or gas, or gas turbines? to provide extra energy, because it needs a whole lot of it. And it's also consuming water like crazy. So technological advancement is an excellent thing. And the technological advancement of that level is most likely going to bring a lot of opportunities maybe in the future. But the question is the energy required. Do you have it?
Have you ever slept with a computer on?
The heat?
No, not the heat.
Yeah. Or the noise from the running hard drive?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, they don't have hard drives anymore. They have solid state drives now. It looks literally like a RAM, like a stick of RAM.
No, you must afford the expensive one. I'm still running the old one.
Okay. By the time that you catch up to the technology.
Yeah.
I recently tried sleeping. Okay, I still fall asleep. Even though the computer is on. I fall asleep. But every time while I'm lying there, falling asleep, trying to fall asleep, I go like, man, this computer is loud. And it's just the cooling fan.
Yeah.
It's just the cooling.
Yeah, the fan that's running.
That's running.
Yeah.
That's all. It's just the cooling fan. And the power supply is a fan. And the CPU is a fan. And the graphics card is a fan.
Jeez.
Most of the parts have fans. And the big cooling fan is for everybody. And when you lie there, you go like, but this thing is loud.
Yeah.
If they are literally, because most women that I've known from my mother, okay, except my sister, but from my mother to some of the women I've dated, they can't fall asleep with just the slightest of sounds.
Really?
You can't, the TV can't be too loud on one side. If you are the boyfriend and you're snoring here next to her, you'll be woken up in the middle like, hey, roll on your side. Lie on the side of your, lie to the side and view the wall that side.
Yeah, you sound like a Kawasaki ninja.
more like a lumberjack. More like a lumberjack busy, chopping down a tree.
Yeah.
But all in all, even on that micro level, that kind of a computer is loud.
Now, imagine, how many hectares of this?
4,000.
Of them in a larger size.
Okay, there won't be sound. It'll just be the cooling it needs.
That cooling, even data center, much of the complaint about noise coming out of data centers is not coming from the hard drives or servers or whatever they are running in there. They obviously have servers, hard drive, that's for consumer use.
Yeah.
Now, it's the fans to cool the whole thing. Every time you ask ChatGPT how to ask out a girl, that prompt that you just fed in, a million or a billion something people are doing the exact same thing. At the exact same time.
Mm.
So that server to generate all those results and send them at lightning speed, they must run at a very high speed.
Yeah.
Now, running at high speed generates a lot of heat. A lot of heat means if without the right cooling system in place, that thing will melt. So you will need the right cooling in place to keep the temperature in optimum levels where it can still operate.
Mm.
So you have technologies advancing, killing opportunities that were there before technology reached this level of advancement. And the same thing is taking place in the energy sector, and opportunities are being killed out, some of them, and some are beginning to emerge. Now, all this points to the International Labour Organization's point of view of even after you have gone through your primary school all through to tertiary and you have graduated, now you have a job. You must constantly learn something just to keep a flexibility, not just for new opportunities that may come your way, but for the change that may take place in your in your specific line of work where you find yourself at the moment. Which means you must never stop learning, I guess.
Indeed.
Yeah.
No, but you can't stop learning.
Mm-hmm.
You literally can't.
You can.
I'm bringing now in a very far left.
PM Sheldon. Anyway, you were saying?
Conversation. Where did you jump?
The master of lifelong learning.
No. Well, it
that's
now,
not lifelong learning. That's long distance learning.
It also forms part of an article I read back in 2021 on the BBC's website. It was an article of a woman in London who said she now has to start a business, or she had to start a business at that time, just to fight off dementia and other particular sort of like menopausal ailments that women experience when they reach menopause.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're a listener, specifically a male listener, and you don't know what menopause is, it's a specific condition that women experience because the body now does not have to prepare anymore for, you know, having a baby. So yeah. This means the hormone levels in your body start decreasing, but it actually starts from the age of 40 in many scenarios. The opposite exists also for men. It's known as andropause or something like that, of that nature,
mm-hmm.
where your body just stops producing testosterone as a man. And, you know, it also, you know, it starts decreasing in your blood cycle.
Stops producing or decrease production?
Both, basically.
Oh, okay.
In some cases, because every man, basically every human is not the same as the next human.
Yeah.
We all know this. Even though you do find find the anomaly.
So it doesn't have a specific age. It is somewhat of an age range. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Even though you do find the anomaly of doppelgangers in this world. Have you ever seen that unique discussion, Helmut? That scientific discussion? There will be a person that looks, sounds like me, not speaking Afrikaans, but not with the same name, in another country. There will be a person like you, Helmut, not with the same name, not speaking the same mother tongue or the same background, but the person will look exactly like you.
Oh, I think I went to school with someone like that. People kept confusing us. They started asking questions no, we are not related.
Did you look at the person, you go like, why does this fool look just like me?
I think we were kids at school, but now we are completely different people. First of all, he's tall and buffy, and I'm still slim, and I have my hair, he doesn't. And
then it's not the same. I'm talking about in life, the exact, it's almost a carbon copy of you, but the person is in a completely different country.
Different country.
Yeah.
Different culture, different everything.
Everything. But okay,
that's weird.
The similarities are so striking that in some cases when this particular discussion popped up, it's also one of the unexplored medical scientific realms which people cannot explain. No, it's nothing got to do with cloning. It's just, it's a weird similarity. But I'm digressing. Now, getting back to the particular discussions of like looking at lifelong learning and stuff like that. Lifelong learning also takes place, for example, when a person reaches a certain age, Helmut, and they realize in order for them to deal with certain particular, what would be called the mental health ailments that they might start experiencing, they do something to try and combat the occurrence of the mental health. Now, a documentary I watched last week highlighted how even in the Western European countries, the medical society, the medical industry, knows very little of the issues that women experience, specifically women past 50, when menopause now becomes kicks in severely. But actually, like I said, menopause starts in here from 40, 45 and upwards.
Oh.
Now, the aspect with this particular realm has been how women sometimes get treated by their general practitioner, their doctor, the first medical advice they seek and assistance, how they get approached even with this particular condition, which is a life condition, even in the pharmacy, and even when they try to cope with what changes their body is actually experiencing.
Yeah.
Now, we've spoken at great length across the whole of societies, from wherever to Namibia, about what teenagers experience during their formative years, when their bodies are literally changing.
Yeah.
from 14, from 13 or 12 even, and upwards up to 2021, up to 21.
Yeah.
But no one, like this particular conversation highlighted in last week of the documentary that I watched, talks about what happens at the opposite spectrum.
As you age.
As you age. So, in this scenario also, Helmut, you've got a position how lifelong learning also finds itself. How lifelong learning also deals with people that are close to retirement even. There are isolated reports and stories of people in their pension ages, you know, past 60, who are literally now doing other activities just to combat things like dementia. Just to combat things like Parkinson's disease, even though Parkinson's disease is actually very, you know, very powerful ailment itself.
Yeah.
Alzheimer's is the other one.
Yeah.
There's still, many of the medical realm is trying to solve
degenerative diseases.
Alzheimer's, because Alzheimer's is also related to a way, to a scenario of how many of your brain cells are actually dying off.
Yeah.
Which impacts also the various functions in terms of things that you can remember and stuff like that. And when you look at this, you can basically see how lifelong learning also technically has to help generations that are becoming now, that are close to retirement, or that have to, you know, start planning to get out of the economic realm of things, or even for young generations to who wish to participate now economically in the new economies that we wish to construct around the world, which includes Namibia. And at great length of this, the realms that psychology operates in that has to assist with how you get ready for, you know, dealing with the new economies that you have to experience versus the economies that your parents experienced, that is not being bridged as well. Remember, in lifelong learning, Amut, the one thing that you probably have heard of, which many Namibians have heard of, is the pressure that people experience while they're working, and then they have to go to part-time classes after work.
Yeah.
Now, no one, and I'm telling you this, no one factors in those particular pressures. Yeah, the jokes were made, for example, like in hip-hop music videos about how the rappers want to date a woman that goes to class at night, but she's doing a low-end job, like a waitress, she's a waitress, or she's the other kind of pole dancing variant, you know, situation scummer. Hey, I'm just rephrasing and paraphrasing what I saw in music videos when I was in my 20s, and I was like, what are these guys singing? And then most of the models in those videos, come from other countries. They're not even American.
Yeah.
It's the worst part even. So yeah, talk about economic opportunities.
You know, one thing that sucks about movies is they take models and then put them, you know, in firefighting uniforms and then shoot movies. And now everyone wants, thinks firefighters look like that.
Mm.
As one guy that made a video, and I think, I'm not sure if that was on YouTube or on TikTok, I said, guys, the firefighter here for about 20 years, we don't look like that. that guy killed me. You have to understand, when you are running, when you are running in between responsibilities, between work and home, you don't have time to look like that. You arrive from work exhausted. They say, now your kids need their bedtime story, or you need to help them with home, with work, or you have to help the madam with the chores because she had also had a crazy day with those two juniors that you left at home.
Yeah.
They're just running around making noise, breaking stuff. So believe me, she's just exhausted as you are, even though even if she may be a stay at home mom.
Mm.
Yeah. All those things, makes me look at entertainment differently now that I'm an adult, and going like, you know what? Much of these things, like there's one guy on TikTok I follow who's a whole, he's very dedicated to pointing out that, you know, these things that you see in movie, that's not what they look like in real life. And he has a whole show about it. And then there's this other time we had like a fighter pilot on. Mm. And he was looking at all these different fighter pilot movies. And he was explaining, including, you know the latest, is it Top Gear, Top Gun Maverick.
Yeah.
They said this scene of the Su-57. You know, spinning in some very video game-ish way. Now, don't get me wrong, the Su-57 is known for its maneuverability. But, well, CGI just comes in and kicks everything off course. And it's like, you have to understand that when it comes to maneuverability of a jet, you have to sacrifice speed.
Mm.
Yeah. And size. Now, if you are going to build something that's running too fast, maneuverability is going to be difficult because you have to understand how many G's you'll be exposing, the jet and the pilot too.
Yeah.
Which can either, if it's too much, incapacitate the pilot, which is a bad idea because you need the pilot to fly that thing. For a number of reasons. One, it's a multi-million piece of equipment, would no one want to lose something like that? So you have movies just to come and kick everything, out the window.
Yeah.
So now that we only have 14 minutes left, looking at the available point of correction, lack of opportunities in the world of work, especially in the African continent, with a booming youthful population. Our discussion of lifelong learning is one that is a little bit complicated because how do you then explain this to an African who is in diaspora? Because they are exposed to the German economy and it operates widely different from the Namibian, Cameroonian or Ghanaian economy where they are from. Now, the set of skills required in the German economy may not be similar to the skills required for one to participate in the economy of an African country. So when you talk about lifelong learning to give yourself room for flexibility in terms of change in the overall job market or just your line of work, that, if you ask me, means a lot of different things depending on where you find yourself. And so that means having that discussion with me, it's somewhat different to having that discussion with someone who is in Canada, for example.
Mm.
Yeah, so, but lifelong learning overall is something that is still needs investing in. That's where now you have that giant fork in the road because you have a lot of countries, especially developing countries, they don't have access resources. So that means the little resources that they have is being channeled towards priority sectors.
Yeah.
That means lifelong learning, unfortunately, is going to be trailing behind. It's it's somewhat like I believe it was you that said that. When you are out of food for a number of days, your body begins to turn on itself. Yeah, it basically begins to get rid of not just cells, basically eat the muscles that you have in order to feed all the the primary organs like your heart and your brain.
Mm.
Yeah, so that's basically what's going on here. You don't have enough resources. So how then do you balance training a workforce for the economy that we are building and also make sure that the already trained individuals, you give them opportunities to keep retraining or re-educating themselves in whatever aspect of education or venture that they want to, that they want to go into. You know, the more we look at this, the more we look at all these reports and all these different subjects, the more I remind myself just how difficult it is to be a nation's leader.
One, yeah.
It's a nightmare.
Well, things can be made easier, Helmut, but yeah.
How though? Because wherever I look, I'm looking at the president and going like, let me get this straight. Your job is to run a country. I can barely run my room.
Or even my social media.
I know, right?
Yeah.
I don't remember. I mean, I know I have a Twitter account. I don't know. I don't remember when last I... Jeez. I have to delete that thing. My job is to run my room. And I can barely manage. Dishes are always, if they could speak, they would be yelling at me every day. Hey, you're just walking past us.
You have a responsibility.
You have a responsibility.
Please don't forget.
Yeah.
We also need cleaning.
A lot of people, when they visit us, like, you know what? You should get married for dishes. You do know I can just buy.
Or even laundry.
Like, look.
Laundry is still the worst.
First of all, laundry and dishes. If you are going to tell me to get married, don't use laundry and dishes as to the reasons why I should, because there's a washing machine for both of those things. Give me another reason. Don't worry, I have my reasons. I'm just saying dishes.
Oh no.
And laundry. Like, why?
Okay. I hope you guys caught the pun there.
Look, that's like me telling a woman that, get a man so that he can protect you.
Mm.
Now, if she tells me that, okay, you know what? You know, I can just get a gun and take, either self-defense or shooting classes. Then I'll just have my gun on me and I'll protect myself. What would be my defense, counter argument to that? Because, chances are very high, a gun is most likely going to protect her more than I could. Yeah, because, just the beginning of a fight and I'm already Frederick-ing my way out of that house.
Mm.
And now she will have to... Jeez, how do you come back into your house after the thieves are now gone? And your wife fought all of them and now they ran away. Now, as the head of the house, you decided to tuck your tail. And then skittle. That's one heck of an explanation. But still, it's not going to beat, Jonas' explanation as to where he was for the past 2 days. I mean, 3 days. I was swallowed by a fish. Seriously, dude? That's the best you can think of?
Well, there was no lifelong learning back then. There was a lot of imagination, yes.
Look, man.
A lot of misinformation also, yes.
I'm looking for Jonas' wife. Marry that woman. Honey, where were you? Babe, you may want to sit down for this one. First of all, I've been talking to God. That's one. We are nowhere near the end. I'm just getting started.
It was also a one-sided conversation at best.
Most of the time. Yeah. And,
I was on a boat on the sea.
Yeah. And then long story short, I was shanghaied out of the ship. Swallowed by a fish, vomited at the shore of Nineveh, with the inspiring word of the good Lord. I went to preach and converted and baptized a bunch of people.
By the same fish.
So now I'm back, my love. At this point, every woman is just looking at you. Next thing you know, can we have Ward 16 representatives here? I think my husband has gone nuts. Yeah, you're right. That doesn't make sense.
No, it doesn't. I knew it. I knew it wouldn't make sense, but yeah. I let you dry it out there.
A Christian or two out there that are, splashing holy water and holy oil on their speaker for us. Don't worry. We receive. Anyway. Okay, this is getting out of hand.
Yeah. But when you look at, getting back to the lifelong learning thing in earnest.
The good thing is you and I are already in the line of work where lifelong learning is part of the job.
It's crucial.
Yeah.
It is critical, as many Namibians out there would apply it.
And one thing I almost forgot. You made a decision to be in this lifelong learning.
Yeah.
I didn't.
Well, you didn't?
Look, if I tell you how many excuses Chicken gave to John.
On what?
On hosting the Free Your Mind show. Chicken gave each and every single excuse he had in his encyclopedia of excuses. John just kept waiting for him to finish talking. I was like, are you done? I was like, yes, now, get in there and do it. Bro didn't take any excuse. And first of all,
That worked against chicken, but yeah.
It worked for me.
Yeah. Which is actually a good thing, because when you look at the next particular aspect, Ahmed, because what we obviously have to use here, and this is just to end on this last particular note, the digitalization and the green transition, which we spoke about, obviously, with the data centers and all the digital skills that are needed now for the new economy, and which definitely does not mean you now get trained to work with AI programs, and now if you find yourself having to go back to the farm to basically look at the following goats of Mary, Sue, and Sally. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean that, but the real particular sort of like destination is with the lifelong learning survey that the International Labour Organization did, was trying to understand how important does education play now versus various occasions of humanity since 1950 heading this way in terms of the overall industrial trends that we wish to now get involved with. They highlight here specifically that there's now a significant demand for digital, technical, and sustainability-related skills. I still don't know what that last phrase means, sustainability-related job skills. What is sustainability-related job skills? Does this mean literally being the cowboy on the farm looking after the cattle?
You know, they say...
Because that sounds very sustainable to me.
There's an interesting part that sort of like mirrors or to some degree contradicts that statement from a discussion we had from, HD's audio on digital representation. Gender parity in digital, in the digital economy in Africa. And one of the things that report pointed out, the one that we used that day, was that roles in the job market that are filled with women are the most at risk from digital takeover in terms of AI. And you have also a technological advancement being used as one that is, it's also presenting opportunities one can participate in. I think, that's where you have this, there's a lot of confusion with regards to, is a technological advancement bringing opportunities or taking opportunities? And like every scientific breakthrough, it obviously renders some opportunities or some skills redundant, and therefore, you get rid of them, and then new ones are brought into place. Well, take before the invention of an electric light bulb, they had lamps in the streets, and there was someone who was dedicated to lighting them every evening and putting them off every morning. Now, if you think imagine being replaced now with that thing on the wall. Yeah, what your switch does today was a job. For someone.
Yeah.
What your alarm does today was a job for someone. I can't believe people, there was a time where you could pay someone to wake you up the next day.
Hey, the money back then, it doesn't sound like much money, but the money back then was like how our 10 cents went from a regular silver coin to that.
A tiny one.
That little tiny bronze stains.
The same thing happened to a $1. I mean, it just,
The $1 became thinner.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah. Back then, it was even like the fun facts that my mom used to tell us about the currency back then in the 50s and the 40s. How they had half a 1 cent.
Huh?
Yeah. It was known as the tiki. Half a 1 cent.
Okay, I can't even picture that.
They had half a 1 cent. You could literally buy sweets with a 1 cent. You sometimes, when you look at currency now, uh-huh. you sometimes have to ask yourself, what is the aim of some of these coins that we have? The coins had a lot of meaning in the 90s and in the early 2000s, né?
Yeah.
But then, the moment you started heading it from 2008 in this direction here to us, where we currently are, 2026,
yeah.
you started asking questions, why do I have so many 10 cents on me?
Because you can't use them to buy
anything else.
Yeah,
yeah, you can actually. I What's did that? This one day. I walked into a Checkers with my old 10 cents.
Seriously?
I made like $10. This was like what, 2008, 2009, and I decided, you know what, I wanted a Coke on the way to class, on the way to university, and I was like, I showed up at this Checkers at Maroa Mall, and the lady, the supervisor, the store supervisor said, no, the floor, one of the floor supervisors went like, where were you yesterday? I was looking for 10 cents. How come you bring it today? I'm like,
how would I have
it? Today I wanted to come and share the 10 cents. Yeah. So I literally bought like a can of Coke with just like $9, $10 worth of 10 cents.
Jeez. So that's a lot of counting.
Well, you know, they got their benefit. I got my product. I went on with my life. They obviously could use it further on, you know. But you are right. There was a time specifically, if you look at the industrialization trend.
Yeah.
Now, that person that was woken up back then in Europe to be your alarm clock, né?
Yeah.
That person, Helmut, at that stage when you had to go look at education level, probably didn't have basic education. Do you know that back then in Europe specifically, there wasn't a need for the basic education realm. When we did the Finnish education system, do you remember that only from 1945 did the whole of Europe realize basic education must become a legal need. If you want to modernize your society, if you want to reach the economic realms of the future, everybody needs to be educated in your economy. This thing of, touch and go, rural versus urban.
Mm-hmm.
Even China now recently has had to recently do away with a kind of identification document, which showed in terms of what level of benefit if you're an urban citizen or rural citizen. There was this identification document. It was a little booklet that was recently also gotten rid of in the broader Chinese, you know, development and identification system.
Yeah,
and these particular developments that you need to look at across the world are things that Africa has to be relying on and learn from. Countries like Namibia should learn from these things. Hamut, we can't be playing catch up every year in, year out, playing catch up. Just yesterday, I don't even want to watch this particular report on my YouTube feed, but it's a YouTube feed that says, the new American plan for Africa. I'm like, why is everyone speaking about us like we are one country?
Because they have the money to execute the plan. We have the vocabulary.
Yeah, but here's the thing.
We're the theme for all the speeches.
Yeah, we are 54 different countries. So why is it every time we can see, you and I here in, here in Windhoek today on this 1st of June, you and I can see that Africa doesn't walk with one tune.
No,
Africa doesn't dance on the same song, but Africa likes singing the same song of AFCFTA and other Pan-African ideals. But we don't dance the same song.
No,
the same song. Now, the downside is, then, first and foremost, we're not serious with the African project. We're not. In some of those African countries, you will see that the extent to how serious they are not, to how unserious they are. If you go into their countries, and then you realize, oh, but you guys don't pay local authority rates and taxes. Oh, you guys don't build your own roads. So what do you do with your money? Oh, your whole economic planning sits in Paris.
Yeah.
Oh, every year you go to the IMF for loans. Why?
Why
have you repaid the previous loan of last year?
No, I haven't.
We are just borrowing on top of borrowing.
Yeah.
Then what are you...
I'm borrowing so I can get rich. When I leave the office, the guy who will come and take over it will be on him. Right now, the biggest negative sentiment going against that Ruto is facing, especially
is that he's empowering that kind of a discussion. Eh?
Yeah, he's facing a lot of negative backlash because of the whole Ebola quarantine being set up in Kenya.
Mm.
Yeah.
Which many of the Kenyans are asking, why are you allowing the Americans to bring in sick people when we don't have people exposed to Ebola, but only to be treated at a facility that's not meant for us Kenyans?
And it's just not that. It's not just that. I mean, the country that's bringing this facility here has all the tech and equipment to deal with disease in a way better ways than we can.
Yeah.
So why not just fly them using your C-130 planes that are now have been observed to land here? But the thing is, it was observed that a part of what is enabling the U.S. to do that is has been some agreements that dates back to Kenyatta's administration.
Mm.
So it wasn't until fingers being pointed because of this whole Ebola quarantine in Kenya, when a lot of Kenyans, including yours truly here, are learning that some of the agreements that is making this possible, it's not entirely Ruto's fault. Mm. Some of the agreements were inherited from the previous administration. So this is a part of the transitional government, I think, that is that needs to be looked at. It's a flaw that needs to be fixed, because you have someone that's in office right now screwing up. They know that, maybe come in next election cycle, they're not gonna, they don't have a chance. So, you may as well just steal now.
Mm.
And now what's gonna happen is, the person that's gonna come over, that's going to take over, they will find a lot of broken pieces that they will be blamed for. And we saw this again with the lithium mining.
Yeah.
Mm.
And you can see all those examples in a Namibian context as well. Yep.
You have operators that were operating there that were terribly regulated, and this one is on the Minister of Mines and Environment. So, because of that terrible regulation, so they did not rehabilitate all these those giant pits that they dug. So they just packed their bags and left.
Yeah.
Now the new guys that were again given permits to go and operate in the exact same area, only to find a lot of backlash from the community. And now we had to send representatives from the National Assembly to go and find out what on earth is going on here.
Mm.
Like, shouldn't we have known that there were some unrehabilitated pits in this area? The fact that we needed to send representatives to go to go and do investigation again points to regulatory flaws.
Mm.
And the new guys that went to operate there were blamed for something that the previous operators did. The question is, where were the regulators?
Well, we knew about another report where the regulators were just saying, nah, just WhatsApp it through, man.
I know.
You know, just give us any numbers.
Yeah, just send it through. I just have to compile these papers.
Don't worry about that equation. Just send it through. The worst part is that there is literally no punishment. For such level of work. In the private sector, you'll be fired.
Yeah.
You lied.
In the public sector, you'll be voted back into. At some point, you may become president.
Yeah, that one too.
And you may even afford a house in Switzerland. At the age of 130. Until tomorrow, same time, same place, on your favorite radio station, Eagle FM. You all have a good... If you understand that joke, that's on you. Yeah. So please do stay tuned for Business and Economic segment with yours truly, David.
And on that note, guys, enjoy the rest of your programming in our company.